welcome back to radio.dominican.edu. This is DJ Wise here, bringing you another segment of Musicology. In case you don't know, Musicology is a musical program dedicated to music by the decades. We will be going over the 1940s this week, the swingin', the fun, the beboppin' 1940s. We got a lot of great music for you. That last bit you heard was Glenn Miller, Mood Night Serenade. That first little clip you heard before it was an announcement by the BBC indicating that Glenn had gone missing during his time in the Air Force. Glenn Miller was actually one of many jazz musicians at that time who had to be drafted into the war, whether it be the Marines, the Navy, what have you. A lot of jazz musicians were being taken, so we're going to talk a lot about that. We're going to talk a lot about World War II. It's going to be a very prominent thing, a prominent theme as far as this Musicology episode. But I want to get back into Glenn Miller, because last week we ended with the 1930s. Last week we ended with swing. We ended with jazz and big bands. Big, bad bands. Big, good bands. Excuse me. Glenn Miller, probably the most popular 1940s big band player of his time. There's no doubt about that. The thing about that last song we heard was it might have been recorded in 1939, but it didn't really get to its peak until the 1940s. So that's why I played that for you. Please don't come at me for that. One little snippet. I'm not going to lie to you guys in case there's any Glenn Miller hardcore fans out there. But, yeah, talking about all the different songs Miller had in the 1940s, right before his death in 1944, over the English Channel, when he was flying on one foggy, horrible night. He had a string of hits that, like, from 1940 to 1943, he was the man. And he was bringing everything new to the plate. You know, Benny Goodman, you know, sort of revolutionized big bands. He revolutionized swing. But Glenn Miller just took it to that next level with songs like A String of Pearls, Moonlight Cocktail, Kalamazoo, The Old Black Magic. Just fantastic songs that got number one in the charts almost every year until 1944. And that's why you prominently saw Glenn Miller in a lot of movies and ads. It's because he was the guy that was making music for entertainment. He was essentially like the first, you know, Renaissance guy here. And he was doing movies like, Sun Valley Serenade, where he'd be, you know, working with his big band. And actually incorporating something new that we'll talk a lot about this episode, singers. He had a bunch of, quartet of singers coming in and essentially singing over his big band playing. And this next song that I'm going to play for you is sort of that very first instance where you start to see big band leaders like Glenn Miller bringing in these amazing vocalists. And just adding that extra oomph and essentially revolutionizing music as we know it. This is Glenn Miller, Shenandoah Choo Choo. I didn't pronounce that right. You know that. I want to get to this. This is from Sun Valley Serenade. I hope you enjoy it.
Choo Choo, run it down again. Let's go. One, two.
Thank you. You say, step aside, partner, it's my day. Bend an ear and listen to my version of a really solid Tennessee excursion. Pardon me, boy, is that the Chattanooga choo-choo?
Yes, yes, track 29.
Boy, you can give me a shine.
Can you afford to board a Chattanooga choo-choo?
I got my fare
and just a trifle to spare.
You leave the Pennsylvania station about a quarter to four. Read the magazine and then you're in Baltimore.
Dinner in the diner, nothing could be finer
than to have your ham and eggs in Carolina.
When you hear the whistle blowing eight to the bar, then you know that Tennessee is not very far.
Shovel all the coal in, gotta keep it rolling.
Ooh, ooh, Chattanooga, there you are.
There's gonna be a certain party at the station.
Satin and lace.
I used to call Funny Face. She's gonna cry until I tell her that I'll never roll.
Chattanooga
choo-choo, won't you choo-choo me home?
Chattanooga, Chattanooga,
all aboard.
Chattanooga, Chattanooga,
get aboard.
Chattanooga, Chattanooga, Chattanooga choo-choo,
won't you choo-choo me home?
Chattanooga
choo-choo. Coming back. This is Musicology. That was Glenn Miller. Chattanooga Choo Choo. The infamous 1941 classic from Sun Valley Serenade. As you can see there, Glenn added a very great vocalist, two great vocalists actually, to come in and essentially innovate, cultivate, masquerade this whole new style of swing and make it more interesting. It was just upbeat at a time when you know, jazz was still facing all this trouble and adversity. You know, there's just a fun kind of upbeat song, and that's what Glenn did. He made fun upbeat songs, even though he knew he was going to war. He knew he was going to be a patriot. He was going to serve for his country and be touring around essentially those war zones, and he was going to make people happy. That was Glenn the Great. Can't thank him enough for all the music he's given us. But it does give a good point, what we were talking about with that adversity and jazz musicians. World War II, probably one of the worst times for jazz musicians. Now, jazz musicians generally tend to be sort of blue. A lot of their material is kind of derived off of, you know, maybe some hard feelings, some blues, some R&B, something a little bit darker. That's where some of the good music comes. Now, this is no exception. World War II took all these great jazz musicians, from their band leaders, took band leaders themselves, and it essentially, it made jazz essentially a different thing as to what it is today. If you notice something in that, there was a woman singing. And that's not surprising with, you know, in the 1930s, we had Billie Holiday, we had Ella Fitzgerald, we had women singers. But with the 1940s, what happened was, because women couldn't serve in the armed forces, they couldn't serve overseas, a lot of what happened was that women started to go into entertainment more. That, you know, it almost boosted morale to see, you know, a woman trying to sell, you know, war bonds to the veterans. You know, that's part of what it does. And Glenn Miller actually worked with the Andrews Sisters, who we are going to see an immense amount of during the rest of the show, because they were actually a huge influence on 1940s music, 1940s entertainment, everything. They're a big part of it. I want to get to the Dorsey Brothers because they're big too. They've been waiting for me. They get their turn right now, and they're smelling pretty good right now, so let's go to them. The Dorsey Brothers. We got Tommy, and we got, I want to say Jimmy. I should know that because this is my radio show. It is Jimmy. I totally knew that. Don't come on, guys. Anyway, we have Tommy, Jimmy, the Dorsey Brothers, the two brass players, the Brass Brothers, coming in. Now, they were a big band. They were not together, two separate big bands, but they knew how to pick singers. They knew how to pick musicians. They knew how to pick singers. Everything you needed in a big band, they had, and they were swing. The Dorsey Brothers were swing at that time, and they boosted morale as much as they could. I think it was Tommy who said that after his trumpet player got taken, that, you know, I'm paying this new trumpet player $500 a week, and he can't even blow his nose. And that's the sort of thing that was happening with musicians at the time. You're losing a lot of great musicians, but Tommy, Jimmy, they knew how to find him, even though they were, you know, maybe a little bit subpar. They knew how to find him. They knew how to get him. And this next song I have to play for you is from the motion picture The Fleet's Inn, featuring Bob Elberly, and Helen O'Connell is Tangerine. And you'll notice in this song the just soothing and just relaxing vocals. You'll see just a huge change from the 1930s vocals, which were much bluesier and much, you know, a little bit more melancholy or anything else. It's just, it's new and it's fresh. And that's what jazz was. And here it is.
Tangerine, she is all they claim, with her eyes of night and lips as bright as flame. Dances by, Senorita stare and Caballero sigh, and I've seen times when Tangerine had the bourgeoisie believing she were queen. Yes, she has them all on the run, but her heart belongs to just one. Her heart belongs to Tangerine.
Thank you. Garrett, I am Chapel by Dashay. Tangerine, with her lips aflame. If the color keeps, Louis Philippe's to blame. And I've seen clothes on Tangerine, where the label says from Macy's Mezzanine. Yes, she's got the guys in a whirl, but she's only fooling one girl. She's only fooling Tangerine.
Oh, yes. Some good old-fashioned jazz. Or for my Latinos out there, yaz. This is the one and only Musicology. I am DJ Wise. Thank you for listening. That was Jimmy Dorsey, the Jimmy Dorsey Orchestra. That was him on the saxophone during the middle of the song, during the break. And then you had Bob Elberly and Helen O'Connell, who was beautiful, to say the least. Gorgeous. And also a woman, if you couldn't infer that. Which is something that, you know, was interesting during the time, was that women were coming out and they were getting into entertainment more. And it was something that I think, was a boost of morale for a lot of American soldiers, for a lot of American men fighting overseas. I'm not trying to be sexist, but women couldn't serve. And this was a way for, you know, morale to be boosted. You know, seeing some beautiful, gorgeous woman singing a song for you and dedicating it out to you. That was a big part of jazz back then. And it affected entertainment. And we thank these women for being such amazing, beautiful artists and keeping morale up, even though there's no World War II right now. It's still beautiful. They're beautiful. And yeah, thank you. There's one thing else I also want to talk about. We had Bob Elberly, you know, interesting guy, interesting looking guy, but you notice something about that sing in there. It was really smooth. It was really relaxed. It was something that was sort of like, it was so much just bringing you in. It was liquid almost. Thank you. Yeah, liquid. Yeah, you felt it. And that was something that was sort of popping up, and I think the Dorseys they took that, because the Dorseys found someone, or Tommy did. Tommy found a singer back in the 1940s, early 1940s, late 1930s. Now, he found a singer, this young skinny kid from Hoboken, New Jersey, you know, not a lot of fame, you know, not too much credibility, but this kid could sing. And Tommy saw that, and Tommy was like, that one. He, you know, handpicked him, took him, and that kid turned out to be Frank Sinatra. Now, that's something that was huge at the time, because Frank was like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm playing with Tommy Dorsey, the Tommy Dorsey and the big band. And then, you know, he kind of saw how the effect he had on everyone around him, and, you know, how his good looks sort of made him a sex symbol, and how he was just this almost spawn something else, which he was. And then he broke away from the Dorsey band, and then he started his solo career. And when he started his solo career, the gates of heaven opened up, and we got the voice of Frank Sinatra, 1947. Almost certain of that. His first television appearance was 1943. First album, 1947. Maybe 1944. If you're going to come and yell at me, please don't call up and do it. But Frank Sinatra here, I don't know why, I just love you guys, and I want to play this song. Thank you.
I don't know why I love you like I do. I don't know why, but I do. I don't know why you thrill me like you do. I don't know why, but you do. You never seem to want my romance. The only time you hold me is when we're dancing. I don't know why I love you like I do. I don't know why, but I do. Never seem to want my romancing. The only time you hold me is when we're dancing. I don't know why I love you like I do. I don't know why, but I do.
Frank Sinatra, everyone. The one and only. Pull up your pants, America. We're back. Back at Musicology. DJ Wise here. Thank you for joining us. All right. All right. I have to fan myself off here for a second. Frank Sinatra. We all know him. We all love him. First album right there. That's where he started, everyone. You know, he one of the men who was breaking that sort of big band swing vibe and kind of turning music into something else, turning jazz into something else at that time. For those of you who don't know, that was I Don't Know Why, I Just Do, a ballad off of the first album, The Voice of Frank Sinatra. Now, that was interesting because there's another guy out here. There's another male singer who is starting at almost the exact same time as Frank Sinatra, who might have gotten maybe a little less recognition for his skin color. You know, racism might have played, you know, a key role in why this person was categorized in R&B as opposed to, you know, the swing or the white music of the time. They separated them into race, the billboards. But what was interesting is that we have another artist who had hundreds of hits that we love and know today that was almost the same soothing, swooning, fun, I don't want to say fun, but just melting music that just sits in your ears and just it anytime you're feeling down, this is the sort of music that makes you feel calm. This is Nat King Cole with Route 66. Thank you.
If you ever plan to motor west, travel my way, take the highway, that's the best. get your kicks on Route 66. It winds from Chicago to LA, more than 2,000 miles all the way. Get your kicks on Route 66. Now you go through St. Louis, Joplin, Missouri, and Oklahoma City looks mighty pretty. You'll see Amarillo, Gallup, New Mexico, Flagstaff, Arizona, don't forget Winona, Kingman, Barstow, San Bernardino. Won't you get hip to this timely tip when you make that California trip? Get your kicks on Route 66.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan.
That was Nat King Cole and FDR, not together, of course, but Nat King Cole with Route 66, his hit from 1946, essentially the song that took his trio out and made it the amazing thing that it was in the years later in the 1950s. Trios were actually starting to become popular back then. Big bands were sort of kind of falling down. They weren't as popular, which was interesting. And we're going to get a little bit further into that with some more musicians that I want to surprise you with. But I do want to address that little snippet of FDR talking, that famous quote there, a day that which will live in infamy. My dad's going to kill me if he hears me screw up. Anyway, I wanted to talk about African-Americans in the military. I want to talk about how African Americans dealt with World War II, because things were bad for everyone. Things were especially bad for African Americans again. Much like the Great Depression, Black community was adversely affected just way more, and it brought a certain something to music. And that was just this new sort of sense. Like, you had a lot of Black musicians speaking out as well. You had, you know, essentially all these Black entertainers saying that, you know, if you're not going to give us rights back in America, we're not going to serve the country. There were some Black entertainers who said that, you know, if I'm out in the military, you know, I'm going to shoot every white person because I've been affected by every white person, whether it's a German, a Frenchman, or an American. It's, which makes sense. You can't feel bad for anyone. That was the sort of mentality that was going on, and almost it was kind of deserved. If you think about it, you know, imagine being a black soldier, being like, "Oh, okay, I'm going to go off, maybe risk my life for a country where I'm going to come back, and there's going to be Jim Crow laws there restricting me, almost as bad as they were in Germany." Why would I want to help a country that's just taken from me, just taken and taken and taken? And then we started to see some more freedom. We started to see some connectiveness. And I think because of that, music started to change. And that is sort of a good segue back into Nat King Cole. Because this is a guy who was, you know, kind of singing like Frank Sinatra back then. And, you know, slicked his hair back. Almost looked like a white person. Not even close. But he was essentially coming into white music. And I, you know, that was okay, because everyone was coming together, everyone was working together to defeat those Nazis and the snow monsters and just everyone that was hurting our freedom, and it almost brought us together musically. It did bring us together musically. And that is why we need another war. No, okay, but... Route 66, first hit, FDR, famous speech. I want to get into Bing Crosby because I'm not good with historic facts, but when it comes to Bing, look at that face. I'm looking at his face right now. Anyway, we have Bing Crosby coming up. Now, this is a guy who was... This is the everyman guy. He is essentially everything. There's no cooler cat than Bing Crosby. He's an actor. Kind of a dancer. And he's a singer. He's a hell of a singer. Whatever he lacks for in any of those other two, he makes up for in singing. And he was more than helpful in the 1940s. He was more than a big figure in the 1940s. When you think about people singing in front of army men to boost morale, you think of Bing Crosby. You think of him overseas trying to keep our men and, you know, our soldiers, you know, up to beat. And that's what Bing did. And that's what he tried to do. And he also won Academy Awards for acting, which is crazy because he's a singer. And he also danced a little bit. A little bit. Not as much as, you know, Mitzi Gaynor or anything like that. But he was a triple threat. And he was damn good looking. I can use that word. Good looking. I want to play for you Don't Fence Me In, because it's going to segue into another thing I want to talk about that I told you I'd get into. And don't go away, all you ladies. Bing Crosby coming up here with the Andrew Sisters. Thank you.
Oh, give me land, lots of land, under starry skies above. Don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wide open country that I love. Don't fence me in. Let me be by myself in the evening breeze and listen to the murmur of the cottonwood trees. Send me off forever, but I ask you please, don't fence me in.
Just turn me loose, let me straddle my old saddle underneath the western skies. Cayuse, let me wander over yonder till I see the mountains rise.
I want to ride to the ridge where the west commences and gaze at the moon till I lose my senses, and I can't look at hobbles and I can't stand fences. Don't fence me in.
Oh, give me land, lots of land under starry skies. Don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wide country that I love. Let me be by myself in the evening breeze and listen to the murmur of the cottonwood trees. Send me off forever, but I ask you please don't fence me in. Just turn me loose, let me straddle my old saddle underneath the western skies.
On my cayuse, let me wander over yonder till I see the mountains rise.
Ba 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 ba.
I want to ride to the ridge where the west commences and gaze at the moon till I lose my senses. And I can't look at hobbles and I can't stand fences. Don't fence me in. No,
Papa, don't you fence me in.
Welcome back, Bing Crosby, the Andrews Sisters. That is just one of the very great examples I was trying to get to. You know, you have people trying to boost morale in America and overseas, fighting them damn Nazis and them fascists. And those vampires. And they were essentially these musicians at that time. They were keeping everyone together in a sense. I'd like to think music coming from the right side of your brain, it, you know, makes you forget about all that, all those logical problems you need to worry about. You know, did I pick up my grandma from the gas station? Whatever. And they just let you free your mind. And that's what was happening during that time. And you had essentially not only musical barriers but race and gender barriers being broken. You heard the Andrews Sisters in the background there singing, and the Andrews Sisters were huge back in the 1940s. They were doing commercials. They were working with Glenn Miller. They were working with Bing Crosby. They were doing movies, and they had hits all up and down the Billboard. And that's something that we hadn't really seen before. You know, women coming into entertainment like this and breaking these barriers. And the Andrews Sisters were definitely a couple of the first to do that, you know? They were the first two great-looking sisters with one all right one, who came in and who kind of took, like, a country sound and just made it popular. And we thank the Andrews Sisters for that. But I'm done talking about, you know, this singing jazz. I'm done talking about all this, you know, this mainstream, man. It's over, okay? It's all just fascist bull, man. I don't even want to joke. I want to get into some real music, okay? I want to get into the thinking man's music. I want to get into some Thelonious Monk, okay? I want to get into some bebop, you know? I'm a thinker, and I drink coffee, and I read books that don't even have words in them. I'm a thinker, okay? I want to talk about the newest form of music, bebop. Not big band, not with these huge swing bands, people dancing, whatever. I don't need to dance. What happened in the 1940s, the late 1940s, is we got to see bebop come in. We got to see progressive music come in. These guys were Thelonious Monk, Charlie Parker, Dizzy. All these guys coming in and essentially making music, making jazz innovative, making it free, breaking any barriers and just going with different harmonies, going with different tempos, bringing in just Afro-Cuban fusion, everything, gypsy jazz, just bringing it all in there. And that's what we started to see the late 1940s. We got to see some real hardcore boppers not teeny boppers, beboppers. Thelonious Monk, I'd like to think, was someone who sort of headed that sort of new foundation of music, that new genre of music, that new thinker's man music. Northern Carolina boy, moved to New York, started playing piano, got a sextet, and started creating some crazy blue music. And this next piece I want to play for you is called In Walking Bud. It's dedicated to Bud Powell, the late, great, famous piano player. It's off the Blue Note recordings, which he did 1947. Crazy pianist. You're going to hear the different... It's kind of like Jelly Roll Morton, in a sense that it was brand new, but just way different harmonies. Just everything was new, and it was thinking music. And I hope you enjoy it. In Walking Bud here, Thelonious Monk. We got some more bebop coming back. Don't go away. Musicology. Music Central. Monk, everyone, here on Musicology. Bebop at its purest form. Now, Thelonious worked with a lot of different musicians over his time, and he got to work with, you know, Charlie Parker. He got to work with the Duke himself. But there was another musician who completely admired Thelonious and, you know, vice versa, who was also a prominent, outspoken black activist, Dizzy Gillespie. You know, the trumpet player, the man himself. Dizzy was another innovator of bebop, but he brought in a new style of music to jazz. He started bringing in some crazy new foods into the mixture. And what we see is him working with, you know, Afro-Cuban composers, and essentially sort of making almost like a different worldly sound. That's what Dizzy did. And he not only changed music in the sense that he was doing it through bebop, but he was changing it in that he was bringing in Latino music into the whole mixture, and he was essentially bringing in just a whole different genre. He's just bringing in a lot of things. I can't say that enough. I want to play a song for you called Manteca. Dizzy Gillespie and I want to say Chano Pazzo. Yeah, Chano Pazzo. And if you can't tell, I'm white. But this was recorded back, I want to say, 1941. This was one of the first instances where you get to see Afro-Cuban music combined with bebop, with jazz, with anything, in a sense. And this is where next week is going to go. It's going to go into progressive music. It's going to go into not only rock and roll, but just an explosion of different music. And this song right here, if it doesn't hook you, listen next week. We'll be right back. This is Musicology. Manteca, Dizzy Gillespie, Musicology. Dizzy Gillespie, Manteca. This has been the second installment of Musicology. I'd like to thank you guys for tuning in this week for the 1940s. I hope you guys learned something over my ignorant, incoherent babbling. We talked a lot about swing. We talked a lot about big bands being popular. We talked about singers coming in, Frank Sinatra, Nat King Cole, killing it. We talked about Bing Crosby being essentially the Obama of 1940s, and Thelonious Monk and Dizzy Gillespie finishing it up with bebop, the newest, the most innovative sound out of the 1940s that we have seen. You just heard Manteca, combination of Afro-Cuban and bebop jazz. You heard Dizzy playing the brass instrument there. Trumpet just blowing our... crazy. I want to thank you guys again for listening. This has been DJ Wise, your freshly new DJ with his freshly new show on radio.dominican.edu. I hope you tune next week. We're going to have a great show, 1950s. Thank you guys so much. Listen in Wednesdays at 9, Musicology. Have a good one.
Girls need blinders or they could step out of bounds quick. The sidelines is lined with casualties who sip the life casually, then gradually become worse. Don't fight the apple Eve, caught up in the in crowd. Now you're in style, and it'll winter gets cold in vogue with your skin.